Hello, welcome to the photo show. We're under lockdown here, so I'm at home in my office. A bit of a mess behind me. Awfully sorry and all that. But we're stuck here, I'm afraid. I'm not supposed to drive out. There's people being stopped by the police, and that's why they're driving around here today. So I thought I'd try and do it from here. We've had a bit of a frenzied and fruitful and horrible time doing the Mac show, and we might end up having... I might sneak out and try and get to the big show down at the office. But we're here. It's time for the photo show. So first thing up then is the news. First news story today then. There is Victorian footage out there. This is really, really cool. So there's a company called Neural Love. And what they do is enhance and upscale video. So they've taken a whole pile of Victorian stuff that was really kind of tiny, and they've rescanned it, upscaled it to a bigger size, to 4K, using machine learning, and then they've colorized it as well with the machine learning. So they've actually got some images and footage of the Victorian era. They've also slowed it down to the correct speed, so you've got the kind of super fast running around that you normally get with it. And it does look really, really good. I'm well impressed with what I've seen. And the thing that's quite interesting that comes over from it is that you don't get from the sped up stuff is that the people have got an innate fascination with the camera, but they've also got an innate distrust of it. You can see in their faces, they're looking at it with curiosity, but there's a bit of skepticism about why they're looking at it. I thought it was great, and actually slowing it down to normal speeds and giving it that colorization really, really brings the characters to life. They looked like normal people instead of looking at like people from yesteryear. They looked like people from yesterday, and I was well impressed with it. I thought it was great. I watched both of the films that I saw online, and more, please, loads more. These are just screen captures, but you see the little lad there in the front. He's awed by it, but he doesn't know what to think. The US has made a bit of a decision here that I find quite quite interesting. So there's a guy, Fred Allen, and he's Fred Allen. Sorry, Fred Allen is a video maker, and he shot a piece of the shipwreck in the North Carolinas, and used it on his website and used it around all the places. Now, North Carolina then stole, in inverted commas, his footage, and used it in some promotional material. So he sued them and won. Then they went to the appeals court, and the appeals court said no. The appeals court said that the state had sovereign immunity over theft of copyright. So basically what it was saying was that the state can steal any of your stuff and there's nothing you can do about it. He went, that's ridiculous. So he went up to the Supreme Court and had his day in the Supreme Court, and they agreed. So what they said is, if you take a picture or shoot video and the state steals it for their own promotional use, which they do a lot across all the whole of the world, then in America, North Carolina cannot be sued because it has sovereign immunity from civil action for it. Now, I was really surprised at that. But then I read on and went and looked at the judgment, and the judgment said, if the states use a third party to copy, manufacture, or distribute the material, then that person is the one that would be held liable, not the state. Now then, I think this is quite interesting, because I think they've been really clever here. Because what they've said is, if it's the person who's doing the duplication that's going to get sued, then it means the state cannot find anyone to do the copy and the duplication, etc. So if they have a web designer, and the web designer says, right, prove to me that you've got copyright for this image, and they can't, then they go, well, I'm going to get done if I post that, so I'm not posting it. Simple as that. And you're going to get your reimbursement through suing the provider, but the providers eventually will get savvy to that, and the state will end up getting cut off as a result. I think that's really clever, because what they've done is they've managed to control the state down the line, but they haven't created an issue as far as a precedent whereby the state can't do anything. I think that's quite interesting. Very interesting. Doc is messaging me. Bugger off, Doc. And I did say, don't give me any kid stuff. There we go. I've had a right day today. I've had enough of this already. Might not do the big show. Next one. The Professional Photographers Association of America is giving away all of their tutorial videos free of charge. So until the 4th of April, you can access their education library absolutely free. All you got to do is sign up for an account. There's more than 11,000 free online courses that you can go and look at, including that well-known classic, How to Navigate COVID-19 as a Photographer. Yeah. I looked at that and said 1,100 free online courses. I don't know if I can think of 1,100 things to say about cameras full stop, let alone start to do that. Seemed a bit fanciful to me, but well, they're happy. Don't upset them. LeBron James is in hot water. Oh, dear me. Yeah, he took this picture and it was shot by Steve Miller, and LeBron shoved it out on his Instagram. It's hard because he's not going to get any pictures of him playing basketball, is he, unless he goes to the big players. And he put it out in December on his Instagram profile. And this month, Steve has filed for a lawsuit for $150,000. LeBron is going to lose that, I would have said. He's not going to get sovereign immunity like the Carolinas. So bad luck, mate. Bad luck. Oh, this is too hard. I'm not enjoying this at all today. I'll be going down the office in a minute. We're doing the big show from the office. Next thing then is the gear. Okay, starting us off in the gear, what we've got is this Sony lens. It is an FE 90mm f2.8. Now, the thing that sets this apart and makes it kind of special is the fact that it's a purpose-built macro lens. So it's fixed at 90mm. 90mm is okay for portrait. That won't be a problem. You won't get any barreling off it. The macro, I think, is why you're buying this lens. And the macro in the images that I saw did look very, very good. I can't think you're going to use it for much else than that. It's got stabilization on it, inch stabilization. The bit of video that I saw from it, the guy was using it on a tripod, and there was a lot of waving around while the image stabilization looked to find a point. Image stabilization on video with lenses like these is always, always, always crap. I always switch image stabilization off when I'm shooting video with lenses. Some really interesting features, especially with the focusing, because the focus ring isn't actually a manual focus ring for the front glass. As you turn that, what it's actually doing is churning the electric motor on the inside. But I've got the adjustable one of these with the telephoto lens on it for my FS5, and the motors are super silent. They're brilliant for video. There was a bit of focus lag, though. You were getting an awful lot of blurring coming in as they were starting to move around, and it was trying to look for the autofocus. Not that impressed with it, I have to say. Wex have got it for £849. I think that's probably a little bit much for a fixed f2.8 lens, but it's not a million miles out. If you said it was 700, I'd have your hand off. So, but 849 is a little bit too much. Do you remember Polaroid? This is the camera that refuses to sod and die. Jesus Christ. They've had more reprieves than anything. I don't know what. They were bought out by the Impossible Project, who then brought a camera out that was called the Polaroid Now camera, which was pretty horrible. And they've now reunified under one brand with Polaroid to give you this fantastic camera. This is the Polaroid Originals. What's it called? It's Polaroid Original. The Polaroid Now. Yeah, that's it. I've got it right. It's a Polaroid Now. It's a new Polaroid Now. It comes in lots of different colours, so it's really, really cool. It's got a nasty, tiny little lens on it. It looks really plasticky and horrible. It's got one button to shoot. You're relying totally on autofocus to see if it's going to work. And it uses the iType film that the previous one used, so it spews out little, tiny images. Wait for it. These are the tiny images. They look disgusting. What are you playing at? It's friggin' awful. The focus is pretty dire. The coloration of them is disgusting. They're absolutely useless. My daughter's VTech, which she had when she was 4, shot better images than this. And there's another couple. They're a little bit better, but they're still pretty horrible. They're very reminiscent of the crap pictures that my dad used to take with his Polaroid, but they're still crap. It doesn't help. Sorry. Wait for the best bit. Look into my eyes when I tell you that this thing is going to cost you $100 to buy as a camera. Okay. It's not horrible. Okay. Not horrific. Then tell me that actually you're going to charge £17 for each film to put these crap pictures together. That's a little bit worse. And then you tell me you only get 8 shots on a roll of film. So this is more than $2 for a single shot that looks like dog crap. Not a chance. Never in a million years. Won't be buying it. This thing's dead in the water before it's even got launched. For God's sake, die, Polaroid. Just stop trying to make instant film cameras because you can't do it. This is the Zhuan Crane 3S. It is a wonderful looking piece of kit. The Zhuan, I've seen a few of these before and they are extremely good. But the 3S is beefed up. It's built for bigger cameras. And it's got different modular handles. Those two handles that you can see on the back there, they're used for kind of like a counterbalance rock, and they do look really, really good in use. I was really impressed with it. This has got, as I say, it's been beefed up, but this is about shooting with cameras on it that are 6.5 kilos in weight. So you're going right up to the big cinning cameras here, and it still works on the gimbal. Really like that. It'll take a red camera, it'll take my FS5, which is one thing that I've always wanted to do, is stick an FS5 on it. It's got a smart sling handle as well, which gives like powered control for the lenses, but you're going to have to buy the focus ring adjuster and stuff like that as an extra if you want to do it. Other thing that's nice is it's got built-in batteries, that's fine, but if you're going out on a day and you don't have any other batteries to carry around, you've got a battery pack that you can charge up and slot on the side that powers it, and that was really impressive. It looks great. The operations that I saw were great. If you look at the second picture there on the right-hand side, then you can see that you've got a focus ring that's got to go on there with a powered zoom that goes back to the smart handle and that kind of stuff. All of that is extra. So basically, the jib control that you can get to see it and the other stuff is added onto it. The basic crane costs you $650, which I think is a good price. If you want $750, you get the smart sling with it. But if you want to start doing all the bells and whistles of rotating focus and the view back to the crane, then you're going to have to pay out $1,150. It's getting quite expensive at that point, but I still think it's good value for money. I don't have a major, major problem with it. Here we go then, time for your questions. I got quite a few questions today because we didn't have many news stories because of the situation that the world is gripped in. How on earth did that ever make it into production? Yeah, absolutely. I gather Ewan doesn't like the Polaroid. No, I don't, mate. I really bloody don't. It wasn't impressive at all. I thought it was a bag, as you heard. So why are you giving me any grief over it? I've got the chat room up now so I can see what they're typing. Right, first question then comes from Patrick. I want to basically reduce the amount of camera stuff I have. I don't like changing lenses while I'm out and about carrying the big camera bag. If I say I went for a 24-105 lens, is there any downside to the image quality compared to just having one prime lens, say a 35 or a 50? You will lose versatility, but I'm just wondering if you lose quality. I usually don't take travel photos or portraits. Plus, if there was one prime focal length you could have personally, which one would you choose? 50 is great. I mean, they call it the Nifty 50, and it is excellent. And I shot with a 50mm lens for a long time, and probably for a while when I was younger and I didn't have much money. It was about 80% of my output until I got a more versatile and bought more expensive lenses. The thing with the prime lens is you've just got to move around. You can't just rely on standing still and just whipping in and out with the zoom barrel when you feel like it. 35 is wide enough. That's nice if you're talking about going out. So if you were going out, if I had to choose between a 35 and a 50 because I was going on holiday, I'd have the 35 every time because I'll still get nice scenery with that. The old box brownies used to have fixed 35mm cameras on them. Or the Kodak ones that used to, my dad had a 35 fixed mil camera. And you're doing 35mm at 35mm there, so it's perfect. 50mm, I don't think I'd take that. Your 24-105 is a great holiday lens. If you look at a lot of the compact cameras, they'll come with 24-105 as their focal range. They'll do pretty well at the full zoom, although they can get a bit wobbly. And you'd be all right at that one, I would have thought. But if you get the Tamron 28-300, that's going to get really soft at the top end and you're going to really struggle to hold it still. You'll have to take a monopod or something like that with you, but you can get little tiny monopods that will zip up and go down into your bag. if you said I had to have one fixed prime lens to take with me with a camera on a holiday, I'd take 35mm because then I'd have to move around, but I'd get loads of scenery with that and it'd look really, really good. I tend my pro bag, if I carry stuff around, I've got a 24, sorry, I've got a 16 to 35 as a wide angle. Then I carry a 24 to 70 as an overlap. And then I've got a 70 to 200 as another overlap to finish off the range. So I've always got three lenses with me, and they kind of cover what I need. I don't take that much worry about changing lenses. I mean, the 200 is pretty big, and you get a lot less than that if you go from Micro Four Thirds. So you get a lot more compact lenses, and you'll do an awful lot better with it. I don't think there's an issue in changing lenses. I think it goes with the territory. If you go down to something like the Leica system or the Fuji system and the Micro Four Thirds, you'll get some really compact lenses, really, really sharp quality, really, really good cameras, and they'll serve you a good purpose. Next question is from Chris. Ewan, nice to see you making headway again with the photo show. Please try and keep it up. It is my favourite show on the network. No problem, Chris. I'm doing my best. I recently saw that you commented on a video on YouTube how to tell if an image is photoshopped by mentioning hyperfocal distance. Please, can you give an example of what you mean? Okay. Now, for one second, and I'm not going to look it up. I'm going to tell you what hyperfocal distance is. Hyperfocal distance is the distance at which, when you set your lens at an f-stop at a certain distance, everything before and after that will appear to be in focus. Is it going to be razor sharp? Well, the theory says it's good, but I don't know that it's razor sharp. But you'll get a good distance on what it is. So it's a simple principle, and every lens will have a different hyperfocal length. So if you've got a 50mm lens, for example, I know off the top of my head that you're talking 15 meters is the hyperfocal length for a 50mm lens. I'm rapidly trying to find the calculation for it, but I did do this years ago, and I had it down pat. But basically, go to the Wikipedia page, look at the equation, and work it out for yourself. And like I said, I just know that it's that distance. But you're basically taking the focal length and dividing it by the f-stop. So 50 divided by f8, and that'll tell you, and then add 50 again, and that'll tell you the overall length. And I said I know it's 15 feet, so I don't know why I know that, but I do. And if you do that, then with f8 tends to be the one that works pretty well. F11 you could go up to, but you can do the calculation either way, and it'll tell you the hyperfocal length at that point. The woman on the video was saying that anything where you've got the foreground and the background in focus must be photoshopped. No, with hyperfocal length, you should get, I mean, if it's super close, then you're going to struggle. But you should get a general field of focus all the way through the image at the hyperfocal length. Go to the Wikipedia page. I've stuck it in the show notes, and sit and have a play around with it. And you can set it for all your lenses then. And you can have a sliding chart as well that'll work it out. There is a correction factor in it for the aberration of your lens, and it makes a little bit of a difference to it, but it's not enough to worry about because you're never going to actually shoot with your tape measure. But the essence of why I put it in there was the fact that hyperfocal length does mean that you'll get an awful lot more in focus. Damo says, I love my Canon 40mm f2.8 lens, relatively cheap, great lens, and they call it pancake lens. Pancake lenses are great. I've got a 20mm and a 40mm, and I carry them around periodically if I'm in tunnels and stuff like that, and also if I'm worried about my lenses getting a good bashing, because they're dead quick and easy, and I've got them with an adapter as well for E-mount, so I can stick them on the front of my video camera too and get the same benefit. Martin, you always mention the importance of lighting. Any tips and guidance on lighting for macro photos and settings? Mine are still too blurry. If your macro photos are blurry, then if you haven't got enough light, then your ISO is going to go up, and that's going to get rid of the edges, and you're going to get fuzzier images because of the fact that it's grainier. So always add good light to it, and then get your ISO down and your f-stop up as far as you can. if it's still blurry, it's because you're moving, mate. So, I mean, once you start to get into the real, it's like the opposite of zoom. You know, when you've got a 600 millimeter lens, trying to hold it up handheld and keep it steady for shooting video or something, or shooting a still image without image stabilization, is going to be really, really tough. So you put it on a monopod or you put it on a tripod. Same thing with macro. Once you start getting into the real, real tiny close-up stuff, you know, the kerning on the inside of the 5p or whatever, on the 5 on the 5 pence piece, you're going to be struggling. So you've got to put it up on a tripod. And the thing to do then is to fix it over a surface and then actually physically start moving the item around rather than trying to move the camera around, because you'll never get it back. You'll be zooping backwards and forwards constantly. So camera fix and then move the object into where the focal point is that you want. Damo was asking about what lights and a budget and stuff like that in the Slack group. Depends what you want to shoot. If you want to shoot yourself with flash, then go out and get yourself a couple of the 300 watt flash heads. They'll be perfect. You can do some great stuff with portrait with them, one on the subject and then one on the backdrop, or one highlighting or keying the person out from the backdrop. You'll get some really good effects with just two lights. You don't need loads of lights. If you want to do video, then you've got to use continuous lighting. If you want the variability of doing both and buying continuous lights for stills, that's okay as well, but you've just got to bear in mind that you probably find that a continuous light won't go as light as a tungsten flash will. So you'll have a fair bit to do in terms of your ISO range as well there, and making sure you've got enough, and you might end up adding more light in. And then we get multiple sources of light, start flattening people as opposed to seeing that curvature that's important to have light and shadow on the cylinder. Question for John B. The government knocks on your door. They want you to go and take photos in hospitals and makeshift stadiums to document the week of COVID-19 situations. Charming. You've recovered from being unwell and the money is too good to refuse. You can take one camera and one lens with you. Which one do you take that you own? He did actually put as well, if that's a bit morbid, then just answer the question any how you want. thanks, John. One camera, one lens. I would take there's a new compact crop sensored Canon. I had the Canon 100D. I used it for video only, and it shot amazing video. It wasn't very good stills, but it shot really good video, 1080p, and it used to go on the end of my boom, my 5 meter boom, and it was brilliant to move around. I do love my 5D, and I still always love my 1DS Mark II, even though it's an antiquated camera now. But I would love that. And it'd have to be a 50mm lens if I've got to take it. Oh, I might take the 24-70 because, again, that's more versatile. If I had to have a fixed focus, prime lens, I'd take a 50, maybe a 35, depending if I'm showing a stadium, I suppose, I want a bit more width. But probably if I could take a telephoto, then I'd take a 24-70, that'd be enough. Mark, read an article recently asking the question if you can damage your vision by sitting up close to screens. Any truth in this? Well, I know a little bit about that kind of stuff, so it's not the end of the world. But I wrote to someone who knows loads more. So Mark, who's a mate of mine, is an optician. And I said, your question, Mark. Mark answers Mark. Here we go. No, sitting too close to the screen will in no way damage your vision, says Mark. This is Mark the answer, not Mark the question. It may feel uncomfortable and possibly induce a headache, as the eye muscles are responding for focusing on close objects can get fatigued quite quickly, but nobody needs to worry about damaging their eyes. You may notice that your distance vision is worse after doing this. This is down to the muscle fatigue, but will normalise when you get back into a more normal distance viewing routine. If this very short range focusing is required for editing to small detail regularly, I'd recommend trying to do it in short spells and try and combine this with looking away from the screen and focusing in the distance. Even you should always take breaks from your screen, you know, 5 minutes every hour, whatever, the stand thing that Apple keep doing and the breathe thing. Even better if you can go outside for 5 to 10 minutes every half hour. Wow, 10 minutes every half hour, that's a hell of a break. Lastly, if any photographer is doing this and having issues maintaining focus or fatigue as described above, explain your optician the symptoms and the distance you're focusing on the screen, and he'll make up a set of glasses which are optimized for the very short focal distance. And you can take this take away a lot of this over effort that your eyes are having to contend with. So there you go, you can't damage your eyes. Mark works for Zeiss and they make lenses and stuff like that for eyes and so on. If you've got a fairly light prescription, the chances are that you get a set of fixed focal length glasses, so you don't need varifocal or anything to use the screen. Just throw those on, use the screen, take them off and put your other ones on, or just none at all. And you'll get fixed single vision lenses very, very cheaply on online once you've had an eye test. So don't waste your money. I'm going to see if anyone's made any comments in the chat room, but they haven't, so that's all right, we'll keep going. And John said, have you ever done any stop motion? If you have, have you got any tips? I have done a bit of stop motion. I played with Ellis when he was a kid and stuff, doing some stuff with Lego and with not polystyrene, what's the word, plasticine. And I had a go with Brian as well when she was little. There was a program called iStop Motion which ran on your Mac, and you could stick an external camera to it, fix it, and then it would do it. And the thing that was nice was when you snap the shot on the screen, you then wanted to move the piece, it would ghost the previous image over the top of the real view. So you could be careful about how you move stuff and where stuff was. So if your character fell over, for example, you could put it back up and put it in nearly the right position. It was really good. I stop motion, for the life of me, I can't remember who made that. Oliver Breidenbach was the guy that owned the company. But there you go. If you've got a question, send it to us at bridgetechnetwork@gmail.com. And if you'd like to win the colorimeter from Datacolor SpiderX, then you've got until the end of the month. So go onto YouTube, find our YouTube channels, and please give us a subscription. And then next week, from all the people that have subscribed, we'll pull out a winner, and they will get one of those, and another winner will get another one of those, because we've got two of them to give away. Yeah, it'll be good. Loads of fun. We'll be back again next week. I am going to go probably down the studio to do the big show, because it was just too painful to do it earlier on. Have a great weekend, and thank you for sticking with us.